Hello, and welcome back to the second episode of the Not Alone podcast. First of all, we would just like to start by thanking you all.
Yes, absolutely. We had more than 300 listeners to our last and very first podcast.
Which, that's just ridiculous. I mean, I thought we'd have five.
I was expecting maybe a dozen.
Really? That's pretty optimistic.
I know, I was thinking your family and none of mine.
Oh. That's true. I do have a very large family.
Also don't know what a podcast is, so it's a little rough.
I mean, that's all right. But yeah, the response was just amazing, and we've both had people just come up, tell us how much they enjoyed it, give us critique, things that we can try to do better, and we really appreciate that. We really need feedback.
Absolutely. That was wonderful. And thank you all for doing so, and thank you all for tuning into episode number two.
Yeah, and so it's with great, great pleasure we're going to go ahead and launch into episode two here. As you know, I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
Jason, what are we going to be talking about today?
So, unfortunately, we're not talking about more ghosts. So
no more ghosts?
If you're expecting ghosts, that is not going to happen
today. We are
today.
Not a ghost-only podcast.
We are going to be talking about a UFO, and we're going to be focusing on one particular story today. And this is commonly referred to as the British Roswell. The Rendlesham Forest Incident. Now, this took place on December 26, 1980. What's kind of interesting about this is that our two key eyewitnesses, James Pennison and John Burroughs, were actually military police officers that were on guard that evening responding to a call.
Well, to start, they're the two that saw it originally.
Right.
But the really fascinating thing about Rendlesham is that, I mean, the entire base pretty much saw it.
Yeah, it wasn't an isolated incident whatsoever.
No, there were three different unique kind of events that happened, two different sightings, and we have everybody from an airman first class, which was Burroughs, John Burroughs, was an airman first class, up to a sergeant, James Penniston, and then
Lieutenant Colonel.
Lieutenant Colonel James Halt.
28.
Those are pretty reliable witnesses, and that's one of the reasons why this story has like stood the test of time and makes it just one of the most fascinating stories. That's why it's called the British Roswell, is because of the amazing documentation that went into this case.
Right. So what occurred officially back in 1980 was James Pennison and John Burroughs go ahead and investigate what's going on in the sky, and really what they witness is just strange lights flying around, and this lasts for about an hour, a little under, but essentially as close as they get is roughly around 300 yards, and they do witness it come down and land, and then they are just there watching it for quite a bit of time, and eventually it takes back off and zooms back into the sky, dodging through trees on its way out.
It's interesting because they were responding to a call. You know, they weren't just out and
yeah, they weren't at the gates on like, the hey, beat what's or that anything. Over yeah. there?
They were responding to a call, and it was from the start, it was a bit of a mixed message. It was like, well, I saw an airplane crash. I saw a craft crash in the woods, and people thought that it may have been a U.S. plane or a U.K. plane, and so they were going for that. But then other people still say, and there's a great quote, I'll try to find it, but just somebody, one of the servicemen stationed at the base said, it didn't crash, it landed. And that just, thinking about that just sends shivers down my spine. No, it wasn't a plane, it wasn't a bird or anything. It was something that landed in the forest. And that's what they went out to investigate.
They witnessed that roughly around 3 a.m. in the morning.
Right around, yes.
And that following morning, so still we're on the 26th, they do go out and investigate further. From what they find is at that same location that they believe it touched down is actually three possible landing gear mechanism.
Yeah.
And it's basically a 7-inch in diameter circular shape that goes all the way about an inch and a half deep, and that's what they believe was the landing gear that the actual UFO touched down on. Now, the cool thing about that little area as well. Sam, do you mind talking about that a little
bit? I spent so much time trying to understand radiation. I spent like an hour trying to teach myself about radiation. I can't understand it. So what they took were radiation readings. And basically, on their scale, there's an amazing tape that you can listen to. We'll go into that in a little bit later. But you hear them saying it's on 0.7. And as far as I understand it, that's 0.7 millirogents is the unit of scale, and that is significantly higher than the background radiation that we, you know, are experienced just through everyday life. It denotes that there was some sort of radiological event that actually happened there, and it wasn't just, oh, well, it spikes in some places, which it does. Some places it's naturally higher than others, but this was beyond the scope of natural radiation. And that happened just the morning after that.
Right.
That was still on the 26th. And then one of my favorite characters shows up. He is the Lieutenant Colonel, thank you, Charles Hault.
Why is he your favorite?
He's my favorite because he reminds me, or it doesn't remind me, he is who I would want to be in this story. basically, first off, we'll get into what happened with Peniston and Burroughs. That's going to be the bulk of the episode, but they didn't fare too well after this occurrence. But Hault just seems like a gunslinging Wild West kind of a guy. Basically, so it happens on December 28th. Is his sighting, which, you know, right after Christmas, they're having a Christmas party, everybody's laughing, having a good time, and suddenly, from within the hall, they just hear people shouting, it's back, it's back, the UFO is back, and people are just start freaking out. And Hault,
what does he do?
Well, let me remind you, this is a lieutenant colonel, this is the deputy base commander who was entrusted, theoretically, entrusted with a large stockpile of nuclear weapons. And he decides he's going to go find this thing. He's going to catch thing. And so he grabs four other servicemen, grabs the Geiger counter, and just runs out into
his microphone.
And his microphone,
he used to use for voice memos.
He would take notes on it, just record. And it is amazing. We're going to play some audio from that here in a minute because he records the entire thing. It's about a 17-minute long tape. And at first, it's just 12 minutes of radiation's going up. There's, you know, they see things like scorch marks on trees. And then they actually see the lights. And it is just thrilling to listen to. You can hear them saying, what's that in the sky? There's a light. There's a light coming towards us. It at one point, they talk about, it looks as though it's more of a liquid and that there are pieces of it falling off. And then finally, they see it separate into five different pieces.
Which that part of the story was the most confusing to me.
Yeah, it can be hard to follow.
Mainly because also, I mean, again, later on, more revelations occur and more information does get released to us. So, taking that in consideration, we will be talking about that a little bit later as well, of course. But it's
bonkers. Something is what else. It is. It's crazy.
Absolutely. That essentially we have one source of light break off into five other
different pieces
of light.
It's ridiculous. But it starts when, sorry, let me back up here.
Go ahead.
It starts in the middle of their investigation. A serviceman points out a red light through the trees, and he says, do you see it there? And you can hear on the tape, and Hault says, I don't see it. And then he tells everyone to douse their flashlights, and then he sees it, and he describes it as this reddish light with hints of yellow in it. They refer to it as a starscope, and I think, based upon my research, I believe that's a kind of compass with a magnifier on the end of it. He takes out the starscope, and it's just bizarre. He says it's enshrouded with light, but there's a dark center to it, and it looks like it's an eye winking at you.
That's not creepy.
It's just terrifying. Terrifying. The cosmos is staring you in the eyes.
Yeah.
And just giving you a little, hey, what's up? How you doing? You know, just winking at you. as soon as they really take a look at that, that's about a quarter of a mile out, it begins to take off, and it would hover about 4 feet off the ground. And then at that point during the tape, that's where you hear them say, pieces of it have fallen off, pieces of it are falling off. And I'm with Jason. I mean, I was just listening to that and just...
like, what is going on with this craft?
Bizarre.
Is it charging up for something? What can that possibly be doing that's beneficial for its flight?
Right, yeah. How could losing mass make it better?
And then later on, it also was beaming down lights, yes, correct?
Yeah, so there's a certain point after the takeoff, it shoots into the sky. It starts moving erratically. You know, one of the biggest things that people say about UFO sightings in general, but especially this one, was, well, you were seeing stars. You were seeing the planet Venus. You were seeing there was a lighthouse there. You're seeing the lighthouse. Well, what he was seeing were these beams of light that were zipping to the right, zipping to the left, zipping to the right, zipping just like all over the place. Something that a plane couldn't do, something a helicopter couldn't do. They were moving at impossible speeds.
And changing
direction, course velocity. On a dime. Just and go. It's just ridiculous. I just love it. At that point, they start to see it strobe, like a strobe light, just flashing and flashing and flashing. It's around this time where it breaks up. It's one large chunk of light, and at that point it breaks into five smaller lights, and they're just everywhere. I mean, they're just zipping around erratically. They seem to be changing shape. He begins describing them as more of a half moon or a crescent moon, and they become full circles.
I think it's about time that we go ahead. We're going to transition into playing some of the HALT tape itself. We're going to start at about 12 minutes in and play about 5 minutes of it and really just let HALT himself tell you what happened.
Looks like someone came off about 15 to 20 feet up. Some small branches about an inch or less in diameter. Zoom 148, we're hearing very strange sounds out of the farmers burning our animals. Very, very active, making an awful lot of noise.
It wasn't a pigmentation.
You just saw a light where? Yes, wait a minute. Where?
Right in this position here, straight ahead in between the tree. There it is again. Watch. Straight ahead off my flash right there. Yeah, so there it is.
Hey, I see it too. What is it?
We don't know, sir.
So, can I get some of it? Yeah, it's a strange, small red light. Looks to be out maybe a quarter to half mile, maybe further out. I'm going to switch off. The light is gone now. It was approximately 120 degrees from the site. Is it back again?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's the flashlight set. Let's move back to the edge of the clearing so I can get a better look at it. See if you can get the star scope on it. The light's still there, and all the barnyard animals have gotten quiet now. Yeah, we're heading about 110 to 120 degrees from the site out through to the clearing now. Still getting a reading on the meter. About 2 clicks. Meter's jumped 3 to 4 clicks, getting stronger.
Now it's coming up. Hold up. There we go. About a fraction of 4 foot off the ground.
Compass
head of 110 degrees.
All right, I just turned the meter off. Got to say that again. About 4 feet off the ground, about 110 degrees, getting a reading of about 4 clicks.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but
Now it's dying.
I think it's something other than the ground. I think it's something that's... something valuable here.
Tree right over.
We just found the first night bird we've seen. We're about 150 or 200 yards from the site. Everything else is just deathly calm. There is no doubt about it. There's some type of strange flashing red light ahead.
There's yellow.
I saw a yellow tinge in it too. Weird. It appears that he may be moving a little bit this way. Yes, it's brighter than it has been.
Yellow.
It's coming this way.
Also,
it is definitely coming this way. Pieces of it are shooting off. There is no doubt about it. This is weird.
To the left.
Yeah, definitely moving left.
Two lights. One light to the front,
okay.
One light to the left.
Keep the flashlights off. There's something very, very strange. Get the headset on. See if it gets any stronger. Okay. Give us your window.
Notation that this is on a beta reading, too.
It's on a beta reading?
Beta,
okay.
Still has been removed.
Okay. Pieces are falling off it again.
But it just moved to the right.
Yeah.
Off to the right.
Strange. Oh, we're right on the left. Let's approach to the edge of the woods up there. Can you undo that light? Let's do it carefully. Come on. Okay, we're looking at the thing. We're probably about 200 to 300 yards away. It looks like an eye winking at you. It's still moving from side to side. And when you put the star scope on it, it's sort of has a hollow center, right? Dark center. It's you know, like a pupil of an eye looking at you and winking. And the flash is so bright to the star scope that it almost burns your eye. The farmer's house and across in the next field. Now we have multiple sightings of up to five lights with a similar shape and all, but they seem to be steady now rather than a pulsating or glow with a red flash. We just crossed the creek, and we're getting what kind of readings now? Getting three good clicks on the meter, and we're seeing strange lights in the sky. 244, we're at the far side of the second farmer's field. And made sighting again about 110 degrees. This looks like it's clear out to the coast. It's right on the horizon. Moves about a bit and flashes from time to time. Still steady or red in color. Also, after negative readings in the center of the field, we're picking up slight readings, 4 or 5 clicks now on the meter. 305, we see strange strobe-like flashes to the rather sporadic, but there's definitely something, some kind of phenomenon. 305, at about 10 degrees horizon directly north, we've got two strange objects, half moon shape, dancing about with colored lights on them. That gets to be about 5 to 10 miles out, maybe less. The half moons have now turned into full circles. As though there was an eclipse or something there for a minute or two. 315, now we've got an object about 10 degrees directly south, 10 degrees off the horizon. And the ones in the north are moving, one's moving away from us.
Moving out fast.
Yeah, we're both heading north. Hey, here he comes from the south. He's coming toward us now.
One of my favorite parts is he says, there's two of them, you know, they're going away from us to the north. And then he like looks behind him and he sees one in the south. He says, that one's coming towards us. I mean, that's a change your pants moment if I've ever heard of one.
Yeah, that could freak you out a little bit. Absolutely. One thing I just never understood with UFOs and their apparent love of strobe lights. It's incredible to see that possible future technology uses so much light when trying to be, you know, incognito.
Right. I don't think a strobe light is the best way to avoid detection in the woods.
I mean, I agree. That's my first assumption is that. But I mean, maybe it's
who knows. You know what? They know more. They're better than us. Yeah, okay.
Possibly.
They are our superiors. Don't judge them. If there are any aliens listening, I don't agree with that.
I
think you're beautiful. I think you're smart. You as smart. You as kind. You as important. And please don't subjugate me. Anyway, so yeah, like you were saying, there's one point where they see these lights beam shafts of light down.
Right.
Shafts of light, not the other thing, down onto the base. At one point, it's described as one of the lights being over Woodbridge. And then within a
which
second,
which was the other military base.
The other military base. And then within a second, that's miles away, within a second, it's suddenly over above Bentwaters.
Right, which radar has tracked this thing moving anywhere between 2,000 to 4,000 miles an hour, which is
incredibly
fast. Yeah. I can't really fathom it personally.
I don't know why, but I decided I was going to do some research. So I took a look. Their fastest plane, which was something called, I want to say it's like a Venom, that they use for really going, really getting places. It was like 600 miles an hour was its top speed.
I think bullets travel somewhere between that range of speed.
Yeah. Just
that gives you an idea of how quickly this thing might actually be moving through the sky.
Mm-hmm. It comes over onto Bentwaters, it shines a light down. Supposedly, it shines its light directly into the area that was housing the nuclear weapons. And there's just a lot of research out there. There's a lot of stories of UFOs having an interest in our nuclear technology. Have you ever seen Star Trek First Contact? It's probably my favorite Star Trek movie.
No, not at all.
That's fine.
But I mean, as if I was scoping out a different planet, I would of course, yes, look at nuclear arms,
right?
If
possible.
Well,
in that movie, they
is
The aliens. It's a lot better than Galaxy Quest.
What?
Thank you.
No.
The aliens, I think they were Romulans. No, they weren't. They were Vulcans. They weren't Romulans.
Those guys.
Yeah, the very similar. The Vulcans don't pay any attention to Earth until we are able to harness warp speed. Once we harness warp speed and we're able to go theoretically faster than light and all of that by bending space, that's when they come down. And there are people who have said, who speculate, that the aliens really didn't care too much about us until we invented nuclear technology. That was the benchmark.
That's when we started seeing a whole lot more of them.
Yeah. From contemporary accounts.
I feel like, we get checked in on it periodically, but things have ramped up in the past 70 years.
If you want to feel unsafe in your home, you should do what I did and set up a Google alert for UFO. You're going to get...
hits for days.
Some good stuff. It really crazy stuff just show up.
I'll do that for skinwalkers.
Please don't. Oh, Lord. Don't even Google it. That's the last sighting of the UFO.
Yep. Okay. So nothing else has happened.
Nothing else has happened, since that day, December 28th in 1980. As far as we know, officially, there's been no other sightings between then and now.
Right. And for a little bit more reference, Holt's tape was actually released in 83. So this is a little bit more information that we gathered from the initial point in time. And again, the official statement as well was released back in the 80s too.
True.
But other things have come to light in the past 30 years.
The story is definitely not over there. Basically, I want to focus on Jim Peniston, the sergeant who, with Burroughs, responded to that first call.
This is the interesting part. This is where things ramp up quite a bit.
He's caught some flack. Okay, he's caught some flack from a lot of people because recently as 2010, he was introducing new information, new details, and all of that. It took this kind of quaint, weird sighting and really ramped it up into a conspiracy.
Yeah, and that's where I became a lot more skeptical of what's going on, because 20 to 30 years down the line, you're starting to add in new detail, fresh stuff. Are you just looking for a little bit more
attention? As with all good conspiracies, you can explain that. And I'll do my best to explain that. Basically, so we have the official version that happened in 1980. They saw lights in the sky. They saw something land in the woods. They saw something take off from the woods. There were indents. There was radiation. Holt goes out Wild Wild West style. I like to just imagine him on a horse. I don't know why. I don't know if would be the best
he's a rough rider.
Vehicle for chasing something.
Roosevelt, right?
Yeah. No.
Serve with Teddy? No? Okay.
Oh, Teddy. Anyway. That's the bare bones of the fact, of the facts. But what happens next is that, again, this is according to James Peniston. He says that something entirely different happened. He claims that it wasn't just lights in the sky.
It was something a lot more real.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take it over from there.
Go for it.
Essentially, the version of the story we have now is this, that on the morning of December 26th, this is where that quote comes from. It didn't crash. It landed. They were told that by a serviceman at Bentwaters base. They go out, they respond to it. They're traipsing through Rendlesham Forest and they find a triangular craft. It's 9.5 feet long. It's 6 feet high. Go ahead.
And for a little bit more reference, essentially it's like a three-sided pyramid with another
pyramid on top of it.
Intersecting.
Yeah. They describe the craft itself as seeming to be made of a black glass kind of substance, but swirling on the exterior as part of the glass, they see blue and yellow lights just moving all throughout it. They move towards it and they notice that the air seems to be electrically charged. Their hair standing up on end and they've got goosebumps.
And their watches stop working.
Theoretically, their radios, by the time they get back to base, their watches are both 45 minutes off from the current time. And their radios do stop working as well. And they also experience something that we'll probably talk about a lot on this show called the Oz effect. Have you heard of the Oz effect, Jason?
I'm not. Why don't you fill me in a little bit?
So the Oz effect, well, they're listeners.
Channelers.
Unless you just want to look at a picture of Jason while listening to this podcast, which...
I mean, I don't blame
why
you.
Why wouldn't you? The Oz effect... the Oz effect is quite common, especially when it comes to close encounters with extraterrestrials, especially ones where you actually see a craft when you're close to the craft. Essentially, and it takes its name from The Wizard of Oz, kind of how everything goes silent, I believe, as she's spinning up and coming down into Oz. And that's exactly what it was. There was no sound. There was no birds chirping, no crickets, no grass crackling, anything like that. It was quieter than quiet, and exactly
that's not
like...
at all. That's not unsettling.
No. Exactly like you said, their radios just stopped working. They approach the craft. They're within, I think, about 10 or 20 meters, and suddenly there's a bright flash of light that knocks them to the ground. Burroughs at this point is just straight up incapacitated.
Yeah, he's knocked out.
He's comatose. He's not doing anything. But Peniston is still moving.
He proceeds. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's brave, if what he's saying is true, which personally, myself, I do believe him.
Which this testimony came out recently.
More recently. This one...
Correct, this was...
The official version, and I'm not sure if it's the first time it was told or what, but this actually came out as part of sworn testimony. He was on the stand, under oath, telling us this back in 2013 at the Citizens Hearing for Disclosure in Washington, D.C. So they're not messing around. You know, this has gone from, if it is a hoax or anything like that, to be threatened with perjury for it, that's quite extreme. But that's exactly what he did. He got on the stand, he's telling us this story, and he testified that while Burroughs was on the ground, he did the worst thing I've ever done. That's what he said. I did the worst thing I've ever done. He walked up and he actually touched the UFO. And he said it was, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine.
Good idea.
I want to cry just thinking about it. That sounds wonderful and horrible at the same time. He said it had a smooth feeling, like glass. It was smooth to the touch, like glass. And he observed glyphs, strange symbols, which when he ran his hand over them, they felt like metal, as opposed to feeling like glass.
Okay.
They're interesting. Basically, the main one is a triangle within a circle, and the top and bottom right corners of the triangle have a big round
dot,
yeah, basically. That was above the other glyphs, kind of like a call sign. Underneath it, you have just shapes. I mean, one kind of looks like a weird building. Another one kind of looks like a weird building. They all kind of look like weird buildings or just lines. And again, I'll try to link to these images or include them in the show notes. They're fascinating. I mean, they're not, they don't seem like any language.
Well, I think anywhere on one Earth. Of the biggest problems with comparing it to another language is that we only really have 6 symbols. That's obviously not enough to really construct any kind of alphabet from it. So
right. But even then, I mean, it doesn't look like your standard
odd
alphabet. Absolutely. Russian alphabet, Chinese, Japanese, Korean. None of the symbols look like anything else from
here
on Earth.
They're very geometric.
Yes. Yeah. Extremely straight lines.
Yeah.
Blocks, squares, triangles, that sort of thing. There's 6 glyphs in total. When he touched them, his vision whited out. He reported that he felt all alone within a great white light, like he was removed from reality, and that while he was touching the symbols, he had no sense of time or space. And after an indeterminable amount of time, his vision returned, and he was just standing next to the craft, facing the symbols.
I wonder if I can get that security feature on my car. that's pretty sweet.
You just come back to find a burglar just zonked out. Dazed
and confused. that's how I like my burglars.
Just stunned.
Not knowing what's going on.
Stunning. After that point, thank you for that.
Absolutely.
His vision returned. He's just standing there staring, and the craft began to grow bright, bright white. It was so bright that he thought it was going to explode. At this point, Burroughs had woken back up. He was just standing at a distance. He and Peniston both saw the craft begin to glow and just intensify, as if it was just gearing up like a bomb, just ready to go off. It just got whiter and whiter and whiter, illuminating the entire forest. And then suddenly, without any noise, no disturbance of the air, no drastic change,
it lifts up,
maneuvers through the very thick trees of Randolph Forest, and flew off in a blink of an eye.
Right, because this is still a pretty darn small UFO.
Yeah, it's not
this
huge.
Would be like a one-man,
it'd be like a sports car of UFOs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your Ferrari.
This is not the mothership whatsoever. So it could,
you got your SUVs,
definitely...
you got your Ferraris. That's what this was just the sports car of the UFO world.
Essentially, from the size and the description there, I feel like it's absolutely like the fighter. It's a one-man
or
craft.
A scout,
absolutely
kind of. It lifted off, no disturbance, nothing there, and Peniston immediately, as soon as he could, he wrote in his duty notebook, which he had been using to make notes on the craft. We have a sketch from it that he made during that point. He just writes speed impossible. He can't even calculate.
That's fair.
Over 40 other members of the U.S. military on RAF Bentwaters reported seeing it lift off again. And one of the more interesting things as well, although there was no sound, no disturbance of air or anything, nearby farm animals apparently just lost.
They were going havoc.
Just went crazy. It took them a little while, but they finally settled down. And then, like we alluded to earlier, they got back to base and their watches were off. I think they were...
45 minutes off.
Yeah, 45 minutes off. I don't know if they were ahead or behind.
They were behind.
They were behind?
Yep.
So, yeah, they had essentially lost 45 minutes of their life.
Well, I just think their technology froze, essentially.
Froze time itself?
No. Time kept moving.
Okay.
But all their devices had stopped working, like an EMP, essentially.
Okay.
But it was more like a field.
Okay.
That makes sense.
So as soon as they leave the field, it starts again.
Right.
Which mention at a certain point a bubble that was a 15-foot radius around the craft, wherein their radios did not work. That's where the electrically charged feeling and Oz effect took place. So it very well could be. If there was an electromagnetic force strong enough to knock out a communications radio, they're... wristwatches were probably
those guys aren't moving.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're digital, if they're analog, they still should.
Did they have digital?
Yes, they had digital in the 80s.
I'm sorry. I was born in 1993.
You don't even know your age.
Dude, just...
Okay.
I've spent so much time looking at this. I can't remember who I am. I can't remember where I am right now.
Sam Frederickson. your home.
Okay.
Not
with the crowbar
podcast. We're going to do this.
In the library.
Come back to
mustard.
Us.
Okay.
Here we go.
We're here. So, I mean, that was that. And then from there, that's when the other events don't differ like that. They stick pretty well to what was reported.
Originally.
Yeah. It's only Peniston and Burroughs who make such a great detour. And like we said, Burroughs is incapacitated for
right.
the
so
majority.
Right. So essentially we have... kind of one man's witness, one man's
right.
testimony of what actually went down, which is tougher.
Not great.
To believe.
Not great.
I'm just going to throw that out there as someone taking a bit of a scrutiny to it. It's a little bit tougher to believe just one individual. Now, if Burroughs was actually, you know, conscious and was able to back that up, then we'd have a little bit different of a situation going on here.
Right. But
we also find out more information that actually came out a little bit earlier, almost a decade before, in 1993 or 1994.
Wait, are we going to talk about the hypnosis?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
always
man.
Talk about hypnosis. This is probably my favorite part of the story. You liked the aircraft. I liked the hypnosis because what came out of that?
Well, we can talk about the hypnosis. We can do it now, or do you want to talk? We can talk about the binary first, which I think really sets the stage for the hypnosis.
But the hypnosis, the binary came out of the hypnosis, correct?
No, the binary...
Oh, I've got my facts wrong.
That's all right. Who would have guessed? I'm the UFO expert here. The binary... All right, let's back up. Let's start with the binary itself.
Yeah, let's head on back.
You, the listener, don't have any idea what I'm talking about.
The binary. What is
the
that?
Binary?
I think that was Morse code you were trying to do there.
Yes. So essentially, the next day, okay, after this occurs.
So are we talking still again the 26th?
I believe it was the 27th.
Or 28th. Okay.
Well, that's fair because it happened at 3 in the morning. I'm not sure if it was the 26th or the 27th. I don't believe it was the 28th. Essentially, they go home. They go back to Bentwaters. And Peniston lays down, tries to go to bed, and dreams of and is awoken by and sees in waking life
a bunch of visions.
Just
of...
zeros and ones.
Yeah.
Just 0001110101.
Which... most of us
well now
recognize as
binary code,
code
right? I mean, we all know what binary is. It's
the
part of our
computers.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the theory of binary. I don't actually know how it works, but that's fine. It's something that's very widespread today, but especially back in the 80s, it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't as popular. You could say binary code to your grandma, and she'd probably know what it is by now. But back then, it was not something that was super common knowledge.
So what gets me about that is him not knowing what binary was.
Right.
He is a military police officer at a U.S. base that houses nuclear weapons.
Right.
That being said, he's just basically guard duty.
Yeah,
so
he's
I'm
not,
sure
he's
he doesn't
not a
have total access.
He's not a technology agent or officer or...
I'm just throwing out there, if someone would know what binary was during the height of the Cold War, I would assume it'd be someone on a military base.
Holding nuclear weapons. Well, anyway, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. So he wakes up, he sees these zeros and ones. He goes back to sleep, wakes up, goes back to sleep. Happens a few times. Finally, he's just up for the day. We've all been there. We just can't get to sleep, so you just decide you're going to get up early. He gets up, and all he is seeing, all he can think about, is zeros and ones, and it seems to be a pattern. And he says, okay, this is obviously important. So he takes his duty notebook, the same notebook from which we get the picture of the UFO, the picture of the alien, the picture of the glyphs, and he's just writing it out, and it takes 16 pages to write out. As soon as he hits the last zero or one, it stops.
I should have wrote all my research papers in binary.
Right?
That could have got me at 15 pages without a problem. This is
I'm
less
sure
than a paragraph that he got out of it.
I'm sure that they would have loved that. As soon as he gets the last digit, it's done. It's gone. And he does. He just sits on it. You know, theoretically, supposedly, he doesn't know what binary code is. Or at least he doesn't make the connection that this is what it is. For a long time, until he casually mentions it to a friend in 2010.
Right. That's where we find out what that 16-page essay of his really means.
Yes. It gets decoded, and it is unsettling?
Honestly, I think this is probably the coolest part for me.
I agree.
I think it's the most realistic as far as points to find. Because essentially what it is a log for traveling. It's a travel log. It goes through different coordinates around the globe, and very interesting places as well. Mm-hmm. We have Arizona, Peru, China, Egypt, Greece.
And these aren't just
Belize.
These aren't just random places. It's like in Peru, it's the Nazca lines, which I'm sure many of you know are just giant geoglyphs, impossibly huge, created by ancient civilizations that didn't have a way to view them from the air, but that's the only way they could be viewed, is from a bird's eye view. Places like, I'm going to mess this up, Taishan Qu in China, which is commonly referred to as the Gate of Heaven, which is just this huge stairway up to an arch built by ancients. You've got the Great Pyramids in Giza, and then you've got a few others, but you've got my favorite thing.
We also have the Temple of Apollo.
Temple of Apollo in Greece.
Sun, mm-hmm. Which lights sun.
Right.
It seems like most of these locations are really shrines or trying to reach to UFOs, extraterrestrials.
And I don't have to tell you about the pyramids. Everybody and their mom knows.
The Great Pyramid. That is our Egypt location.
Yes. That they're, you know, supposedly built by the aliens, built to worship the aliens, built to point to the stars in Sirius and Orion's belt. Crazy stuff. But those are the kinds of places, and these are all places that we can see. Okay, these are all places we can still go to today. All but one. So let me actually tell you what the memo, or what the decoding says. It starts by saying, Exploration of Humanity, 666-8100. And then it gives some coordinates. It says continuous for planetary, and then it says I think it says advance, but it just says continuous for planetary ADVAN, and then they couldn't make out the rest of it. It says fourth coordinate continuous, and then the, how many are there, seven, six, the six different the six longitude different and latitudes for these different places. It ends by saying, Eye of your eyes, origin, and then it gives a location, and then it says origin year 8100. As in, this mission started in the year 8100. The origin location, as well as the coordinates that are given, both are the same, and it's this amazing thing that we just learned about. It's a mythical island called High Brasil,
off of the coast of
Ireland, to the
Atlantic.
Yes, to the west of Ireland.
That would be the Atlantic. Yes.
Okay, I'm horrible with. Yeah, I guess to the east of Ireland would be like Norway. It would be Britain. Britain. Yes. Right. Okay. So it's a mythical island to the west of Ireland that is said to be home to an extremely technologically advanced people. It's said to be shrouded in mist
and only visible once every 7 years.
One day every 7 years, and it cannot be reached. You can see it, but you can't reach it. And this isn't just some,
maybe that is our mothership.
it could be. This isn't just some crackpot, you know, some guy's reading an old book and doesn't understand it. This island appeared on maps all the way, as far as I could find, up till like the 1800s. There were explorations made specifically for it. There are logs of people going and chasing it. And there are people in these logs saying, we saw it, it was there, and then it was gone. So, mothership, maybe not that wrong, you know, maybe not too inconceivable.
Or
but
a super submarine, something.
We'll probably end up doing a full episode on High Brasil, or, you know, a lot of people think of it as Atlantis, just there and then it's gone.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential of what it could possibly be, if anything at all. Otherwise, I mean, we've got a really cool story about a phantom island that's been seen for hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years.
And was on nautical maps for, again, hundreds just of years.
Crazy. But go ahead. Now, okay, so that's setting the stage. Okay, we understand the binary code. We've got that. Go ahead and tell me.
You basically explained all the fun part that I that's what I enjoy. One thing that I have noticed, of course, is that our coordinates, Britain, mm-hmm. Bentwater, that is not on the log.
That's true. It doesn't appear.
So that might be interesting. Maybe they had a different course of action that could possibly explain that potential touchdown, things like that.
And maybe that takes us right into your hypnosis.
Yep.
Now, please keep an open mind. Okay, this is the hardest thing. This is the thing that for me, I sit there and I'm like, oh, okay, buddy, sure.
So, yeah.
But we have to accept, this is what he's saying. We don't have to accept that it's true or that, you know, it's wrong or anything. We just have to hear it. So just
hear this. So this is quite interesting. So Pattinson goes under hypnosis in 1994. And what essentially we get out of that is he uncovers more information about that visitation. And he learns that the visitors are actually us from the future. And that they are here to harvest chromosomes from us so that they can essentially put a band-aid over issues that we're having apparently in the future, genetically wise, which is a little out there. It's
blowing my mind.
Kind of out there. And under this hypnosis, he also brings to light that the future they cannot go to because it takes way too much energy in order to travel forward, but apparently not so much energy to travel back in time, which is, I don't quite understand either. It's a little baffling.
Well, these people are from the year 8,100. Right. They're going to know a lot more than we do.
We don't know when 8,100 begins. Is it a Christian calendar, possibly? Or is it
a
Chinese,
calendar.
A Hebrew calendar? It could be a few
before
different calendars.
Before contact and after
could
contact.
Be a Mayan calendar? We don't know.
fair, I guess.
We should do a Mayan calendar. Well, that'd be fun. But
that's over, man.
As far as...
You're living in the past.
The hypnosis kind of brings up is that these UFOs, piloted by us in the future, have gone back about 50,000 years in order to harvest, again, chromosomes to effectively patch up genetic issues that occur to us in the future.
And they go that far back to avoid messing with the timeline, right? That's the primary concern of time travelers everywhere, or people who want to be time travelers. How do you go back in time and make sure that you don't change anything? How do you make sure that you don't accidentally kill your grandfather? I mean, that's what it's called, is the grandfather paradox. What happens when you go back in time, you accidentally kill your grandfather? Are you just going to stop living?
Butterfly effect.
Butterfly effect, that's right. I remember that movie.
Same thing. That was a weird movie.
It was very strange.
It was an odd one.
What was that video game?
Let's we're getting a little off topic
okay.
now.
Anyway, but that's why they went back so far.
Correct.
Whether they came back 6,000 years or 50,000 years.
In that dragon glass ship. Going
remember
back
the
in
end
time.
Of Interstellar? And he's in the yeah. thing and he says, "There's no them, Tars. It's us." And he talks about that's what I think about here. It's not them, it's not they the aliens, it's us.
So maybe we are still alone. But
no,
anyway,
the podcast
also...
name is not Alone.
Oh, whoops.
Come on, man.
I broke it.
You're fine.
At the end of the hypnosis, though, Pattinson also recalls being interrogated by the NSA and that he was also a little threatened.
He was threatened.
To keep his mouth shut about all this fun stuff that occurred in the
80s. There was one point, and he only recalls... It, when you listen to the rest of his testimony, which we'll provide a link to, that sworn testimony from 2013, he recalls many interrogations. This specific one he does not recall in a normal state, and he claims that they used sodium pentothal on him.
Truth serum,
exactly, which we all know now.
It's kind of a war crime.
Yeah, it's a war crime for one thing. But it also doesn't really work. It's not, there is no truth serum out there. You can make people less inhibited. You can, you know,
I think it really comes down to what we believe. If we believe we are injected with truth serum, then.
Interesting.
That's how I take a look at most of the UFO and most of this paranormal, is that the human mind is incredibly good.
It's very pliable.
Yes.
Okay.
At making us believe things.
Well, I mean, your life changes when you realize that you're just a brain walking around, floating in a head.
Bone and
I can't think about
flesh,
this. All right.
Blood and just a meat sack. That's all I am.
Okay. Well, you're not alone. So remember that.
Oh, good.
So
it's about 6 billion of us.
Yes. 7 billion now. 7.5.
Gosh. Crazy. So quick. Back on topic.
Back on topic. We're back. So that's the hypnosis. It's the part that for me is a little bit hard to wrap my mind around, because you get a lot of these. You get a lot of, oh, I saw a craft in the sky or something, and then there's a hypnosis and it actually is different. It's more detailed and stuff like that. In fact, the first abduction case in America and maybe even in the world in modern times, Betty and Barney Hill, which is just fascinating, they only recalled their actual abduction through hypnosis. And some people say, well, it does. It uncovers memories. It uncovers things you've put down.
The brain is also insanely good at protecting.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well. Covering things up, making sure you don't lose your mind.
It will shut things away for you.
And then there are other people who say, he's not making it up. It's not just fake or fabrication, but that he's being influenced. And for example, there was a movie that aired on a sci-fi network around this time that had pretty much that storyline, that there was an alien craft that got downed in a forest. The inhabitants of it were time travelers from the future who were humans who are here to heal genetic problems.
So potentially it was just his subconscious remembering that.
Yes, he may have seen it on TV and then
his own experience.
Well, and it could have been, I mean, a craft in the forest, if we understand the first part to have happened where he actually does see and touch the craft, I mean, that's going to be something where your mind latches onto it, and maybe subconsciously it brings it up. And then again, subconsciously, you know, it's totally possible that it's all true. We're not here to tell you what's true or not. But so that was the hypnosis. The most lasting piece of evidence for me, though, and also the most tragic about this case, is the medical
damage
that falls
to their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Within
very quickly.
Within 3 weeks, both Peniston and Burroughs were unable to walk. They could kind of walk, but they were having a hard time walking due to inner ear and eye problems, and Peniston's gums actually turned white, which is
a telltale sign for radiation poisoning.
Just radiation sickness. Peniston also developed, please don't judge me here, I think I'm saying this right, Meniere's disease, which is, I double-checked, it's classified by the Mayo Clinic as a rare disease. It's not one that everybody has.
It occurs quickly, it's not.
It causes random spurts of vertigo and dizziness, so again, inner ear problems, as well as a fluctuation in hearing levels, things like tinnitus as well. And Burroughs actually developed a severe heart problem just weeks after the event, and still to this day carries a defibrillate rate. Can you say that word?
Defibrillator.
Thank you. And pacemaker with him.
A pacemaker's inside. He can't just carry that around.
Okay.
Like, it's
defibrillator with him and a pacemaker within device. Him. Yes. These things.
Oh, he just goes into their EMP.
Oh, Lord. These things are documented. I mean, you can, if you were so inclined, if you were able to, you could see that Peniston has been treated by the VA for Meniere's disease, that Burroughs has been treated for heart problems. We're going to talk about that more in a moment.
Yeah, this is absolutely the tragic part about it. A lot of stories you hear don't really have negative side effects happening to the witnesses. This is the absolutely worst
tragic
part of the story.
2 days after the event, okay? So what would that be? That would be December 28th, December 29th. An aircraft from Langley, Virginia, which, if you didn't know, is the home of the CIA, landed at Bentwaters, and it was complete with a special investigations team. So this is what we were saying earlier, how he claims to have been threatened to be interrogated. And we started the show off by giving the official thing that happened, the actual statement that Peniston and Burroughs gave. Which was, there were lights in the sky, they flew into the forest, and then I saw them through the trees, and then they flew out of the forest. That is the official statement. And what Peniston is saying is that he was asked to write a description by the special investigations team. His description was 4 pages long. They gave it back to him later at half a page. That's all that they took from it. he was ordered to memorize this, and it was written specifically to make it sound like he saw the craft from far away. He didn't have any contact on it, and it encourages...
It could have been something else.
Yeah, it encourages people to believe that Peniston was either hallucinating or misidentifying Venus or an aircraft or something like that.
There's been other things as well. There's gentlemen that say that he used a cop car to create the lights too.
Oh my gosh!
Which that's been
just we'll get a into little that nuts. In a moment. It's my I hate him. I don't even know his name, and I hate him. Anyway, but that's what has been claimed, is that this is not the government trying to do their best to get to the bottom of it. This is the government knowing what's going on, knowing what happens. Peniston says that he was describing the glyphs on the craft to this team back in 1980, and that they were completely disinterested, that they didn't care at all. And at that point, during the citizens hearing for disclosure, somebody from the galley actually yelled out, they knew. Maybe they did.
They might know the rest of the alphabet there.
Yeah, they might know.
That might be old information.
More that they let on. But he claims he was interrogated multiple times, and then when he went under the hypnosis again, he claimed he was interrogated under the influence of sodium pentothal, which was ruled unconstitutional for use back in the 1950s. So and, way before this
the
happened.
CIA also kind of took point on the investigation as well, correct?
The CIA did Air Force Special Investigations Team really got on the ground,
yeah,
and did the data gathering and all of that.
For the potential landing site.
For the landing
site. I find that to be actually quite interesting, because we have CIA and American Task Force basically on British soil doing the investigation. Mm-hmm. Because it was not at the base.
Right. It wasn't.
It was in the forest.
Yes.
So I think that's also something very interesting to point out as to a, hey, didn't we know what was going on?
Right. Why would we be there? I mean, sure, our people saw it. Our people got sick from it. But this was on sovereign land. And even then, I mean, yes, there could have been it makes sense for there to be an Air Force Special Forces thing, because you know, nuclear weapons, state secrets, all of that. It doesn't make sense for us to run the whole show if it's just your standard unidentified object sighting.
Yeah, why do we care that much?
So they also claimed that they, both Burroughs and Peniston, they as well as others on the base, were victims of mental manipulation and were drugged by the NSA. That they had their minds messed with, their memories altered. The British Ministry of Defense has lost an estimated 40,000 files on Rendlesham.
How does that even happen?
Right? I mean, it was before it was computerized, and there's like this whole big long... I read this thing saying, well, we only keep this data for 3 months or 3 years, and then we throw it out. But there have been people who have been able to find things that in theory should have been thrown out but weren't. One paranormal researcher named Nick Redfern recently, maybe not super recently, but in the 2000s, found data that in theory, if things were just getting shoveled out and thrown away normally, should have been gone by then. So it's kind of hokey that they're losing these things, keeping others from the time period. And one of the most interesting things about this is actually a gentleman named Nick Pope. He was an official at the Ministry of Defense, and he admits, he doesn't say it was necessarily out of malice or, you know, conspiracy, but he does admit that documents that were destroyed that shouldn't have been. And he kind of made it his mission to bring the truth of Rendlesham out, to find out what happened. He has an amazing book called Encounters with Rendlesham Forest that's co-written by Peniston and Burroughs, that if you're interested at all, just get that book. It's amazing.
Do you recall when that book was actually published?
It was, I want to say it was after 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
So fairly recent. Mm-hmm. Also things that have come to light. It has been kind of an interesting and bad form of record keeping is the healthcare records for
I don't know if Pedersen. This is just bad record
It's really just an endless cycle of, we don't have it, you have to go there.
Yeah.
And that's been the greatly unfortunate thing for them, is for their health needs, because these have had long-term effects as well. From heart issues that we have talked about with Burrows, to, again, with the vertigo and other issues that Pedersen was also experiencing too, is they were not able to have proper medical attention, medical care, and insurance for quite a long time.
They could not get their own health records. They asked, and they were denied. They asked, they were denied. There was one point where Burroughs' healthcare provider...
had to deal with that.
Yeah, I don't even know how to ask for my health records. I don't want to see them. They're probably terrifying. There was one point, at least one time that we know of, that Burroughs' healthcare provider asked for it for them because he has serious heart problems, and they were... The Air Force came back and said, well, you know, this man Burroughs did not serve in the Air Force between 1979 and 1982, so it's got nothing to do with that. And it's like, well, I did. You know, he was there.
Right, a lot of misinformation.
They were, again, according to Peniston, they were sworn to secrecy, and they were forced to lie to their healthcare providers about the exposure to radiation, which, if that is true, is unconscionable. It is disgusting. It could have taken years and years and years off of these people's life, whether it's a UFO that caused it, whether it was an issue with, you know, one of the nuclear objects at the facility. That is just ridiculous. Like Jason was saying, the Air Force would say the State Department had him, the State Department would say the Air Force had him, back and forth. Thankfully, when they came out to that citizens hearing on disclosure back in 2013, they came out specifically not to make money, not to try to drum up attention.
Yes. Thought is, hey, are
and
these
rightfully
guys doing
so.
It for,
we need
you know,
to be
some
skeptical.
Sort of financial gain.
We need to be skeptical.
A tough spot where having this publicity would help them.
But they primarily did that because they needed to put some sort of pressure so that on the Air Force, on the VA and all of that, so that they could get the help that they needed. And actually, due to the help of one Mr. John McCain, who took a personal interest in these guys,
who'd have thought?
They finally, in January of 2015, the VA actually settled with Burroughs, paying for and allowing him to receive life-saving surgery for a shredded heart valve. And it's interesting because there was a paper put out that talked about, what was it called? UAP, unknown or unidentified aerial phenomenon, which is just a more official way of saying, you know, UFOs. And it was a study linked to radiation. And one of the very last things in that article said, it's put out by the government, said, the Rendlesham Forest incident may be a case of like the damage that can be caused by radiation from unidentified aerial phenomenon.
So essentially a warning, don't touch it.
Right. Well, yeah, but that's a nail in the coffin. That's the government saying,
finally owning up.
Yes, owning up. And I'm stuck in this position. Okay. I'm stuck in, you know, that meme with the guy and he's got the two buttons. And he's sweating, trying to choose which one to push. And on one of the buttons for me, it says, like, the government owned up. This actually happened. There are real UFOs. And on the other side of the button, or on the other button, it says, you can't trust everything the government says. And I just have to sit there and just have that juggle war with him. Myself. But they settled with him in full in January of 2015, and they admitted that he was injured in the line of duty in 1980. There's no other event he could have been injured in other than the Rendlesham Forest incident. So, I mean, that's the cover up of it, is just they weren't letting them tell the truth. They weren't giving them access to their own records. They were trying to keep it a secret for as long as they could. And they did. They kept it a secret for, you know, 35 years. And
right,
even
which...
then...
They had lasting long-term
yeah.
horrible effects, to U.S. service members.
Mm-hmm. At least two. We took a look in the citizens hearing for disclosure testimony. Peniston does mention other people as well. I wasn't able to find any specifics there, but other people who were negatively affected by it. But yeah, just, I mean, and he says it's not about, trying to, Burroughs, I believe, said it's not about, you know, trying to deceive people. It's not about trying to keep a secret. It's about power. It's about the government not wanting to look like they were caught with their pants down by UFOs.
Something we weren't prepared for.
Yeah. We want to give the impression that we can protect our own, that we don't have anything to worry about. And unfortunately, there are some things that we can't be protected from. And UFOs are one of them, if they choose to go crazy. So, what's next?
So,
do you want to talk about Halt?
What has happened to Halt?
Well, yeah, he didn't do too much. Basically, Halt himself, this is the lieutenant colonel, he had his experience, did his thing. He submitted a report, which is actually very fascinating. It is a official government document called the Halt Memo, that explains, you know, we saw unusual lights, there were these indentations, there were, there was higher levels of radiation, I saw this thing, it broke into five different objects, it was disappearing and all of that. So that's an official government document that's been filed. He personally, and that was back in 1983, he personally believes wholeheartedly that something happened and that it was otherworldly. In 2015, we mentioned it earlier, in 2015, he released confirmation from radio operators serving at Bentwaters at the time that the craft was sighted. Sighted on radar, and it traveled 60 miles in 2 to 3 seconds, then crossed back and did it again. And they estimated it at a speed of 2,000 to 4,000, somewhere in there. He claims, again, that UFOs shined beams of light onto the nuclear weapon storage area. He also believes that people were drugged, mentally manipulated, after the events for the purposes of covering up. And he actually was attacked by one of his commanding officers, Colonel Conrad, who said he should be ashamed of himself for implying that their governments are deceiving the people. And then in true cowboy fashion, I just love Halt. In true cowboy fashion, he says, well, then riddle me this. Why is it that in your, you know, in this, what was it? It was an article in Omni magazine in 1983 of March. Why did you say those lads saw something, but I don't know where it is? And then after that, you said I was outside, but I never saw anything in the sky. And then after that, you said I never even went outside. I mean, this guy is just
keep changing stories.
Just changing stories. He's changing stories as much as Peniston is changing stories. It's just ridiculous. But so yeah, Halt didn't do too much. He is still though very active, showing up to places, giving speeches, trying to collaborate, trying to help however he can.
Yeah, to me, I think Halt is probably our most legitimate source.
He's the most rational. He's what you would expect from a man who is entrusted with nuclear weapons. You know, he's sober and solemn about it. But even then, even if we were doing this on Halt's details alone, seeing the light, seeing it break up into five pieces, seeing it zoom at thousands of miles an hour, I mean, that's just insanity. That's just crazy in and of itself.
Right, and I mean, this report they filed would probably cost him his job if it wasn't legit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And that's, I mean, that is the thing. That's what, and I mentioned Nick Pope earlier, you know, we were talking about how when Peniston first reported the events, it was very tame. And then he came out with these other things later. Nick Pope, who investigated many, many, many UFOs for the Ministry of Defense, said that this is typical. I mean, this is how
things get blown.
Yeah. Service men, service women, they see something they can't understand. They don't know the rules. They don't know what they're allowed to say, what they're not. They don't know how they're supposed to act. He says that he is not at all surprised that they went from this kind of banal, oh, we saw lights in the sky. It was a weird thing to this crazy fantastical story because he's seen it happen so many times during his cases. And like I said, he himself as well is just an ardent supporter for disclosure, for proper recompense, and making sure that these guys get taken care of.
And if there's anything that we can take away from the story, I think that is probably the chief, is that really helping these service members is probably going to mm-hmm. be the biggest thing that can come out of it. No matter if, yes, it does eventually get absolutely legitimized and this occurred, the biggest thing to take into consideration is what occurred to these service members.
Yeah,
what they had to experience and what they've gone through the past 35 years.
They were...
based off of this one encounter.
They were in the line of duty. I mean, they were. Regardless of how you want to believe it, one way or the other, both of these men have documented medical, life-changing, life-threatening medical problems that seem to be tied to an event in 1980 in Rendlesham Forest in Suffolk in Great Britain. And that's, to me, that is the reason to keep telling this story. That is the reason to, it's a great story. It's
absolutely.
I love this story with all of my heart. I love the name Rendlesham Forest. I love the binary code. I love the hypnosis. I love the weird chart. I love the time travelers. But it's more than entertainment. It's a way to say, if our boys get hurt, we need to take care of them. And thankfully, just last year, like I said, Burroughs received life-saving surgery. People like Senator John McCain, other congressmen and women heard their story, reached out, put the pressure on, and finally got them the help that they needed. And that is what matters most.
Yeah. If nothing else of this story is real, that is.
That is.
That's what matters probably the greatest in my mind.
I agree. So, I mean, the last thing, I guess. Okay, so there's one other thing that I'd like to talk about, too, is a guy named Larry Warren. We're just going to touch on him really quick. He is considered a non-reliable witness. He gave an entirely... He was a serviceman. I think he was an Air Force or an Airman First Class as well. He gave an entirely different account of the craft being kind of shrouded by something. They surrounded it and made contact with real aliens, with gray aliens. They communicated to their base commander, General Gordon Williams, and were told one by one to go back home. His story is almost more fantastical than Peniston's. He's been telling it for a long time. He's been telling it since the start. And I truly believe that it is always possible that he is the attention seeker. You always get someone who's, you know, just trying to make a quick buck, get some attention, all of that.
15 minutes.
Right. 15 minutes of fame. That's exactly what we're going for here.
No, this is my launch pad. I'm going to radio after this.
Okay. I believe this is something that you see. This is why, to get personal for a moment, this is why when you tell people that you believe in aliens and this and that, why they have that visceral gut reaction of, ugh, I thought you were a sane, normal human being. The government wants us to look crazy. Okay, and I know that sounds crazy. You don't have to tell me that.
Oh, you are, Sam.
The government wants people out there who are saying, I was abducted by aliens and we fell in love and now we're having a baby together. They want the crazy. They want the National Enquirer out there. They want the Star, the Mirror. They want all of these publications out there because it takes it from being a reasonable idea that we're not alone in the universe, and it turns it into
something fantastic,
something fantastical, something crazy. And that's what I believe happened to Larry Warren, that he had his memories tampered with. He had his mind altered in such a way to create a disinformation campaign that was meant to make us all look insane. And so, you know what?
It worked. You talking a little bit more about conspiracy theory, right? That little guy there.
Even
that
was more just, that conspiracy.
Was a little plug for
this
a conspiracy.
Is a Russian nesting doll of conspiracy theories.
Oh boy.
I have spent so long looking at this. I've gone down so many rabbit holes and all of them point to conspiracy. And I'm not,
of course.
I think my dog's probably involved.
Baron.
He's watching me right now. Anyway, so that's Larry Warren. Yeah, you know, there aren't, we kind of covered the other possibilities.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, mentioned
a few other things, lighthouses.
The lighthouse.
I brought up the cop at one point in the time. Cop,
yeah, so cop this lights. Cop shows up one day. I'm not going to do a British accent. I was thinking about it. I'm not going to do a British
that's
accent.
For the best.
This cop shows up and he tells some BBC reporter, I was at Bentwaters in 1980 on December 26th, and there was no UFO. What happened is I turned on my flashing blue and red lights, and I pointed my flashlight in the air and made them believe there was a UFO. So, obviously, that's dismissed. We don't even need to talk about that. The other one that a lot of people point to is the fact that there is a great big lighthouse, and it's in the same direction that Halt saw the lights,
which again makes sense, right? For the coastal area,
totally. Halt himself hates the lighthouse. He has said multiple times it's not the lighthouse because I could see them both at the same time. I could see the flashing lights and I could see the lighthouse. And when these lights happened, these sweeping lights that came down from the craft, they came down vertically from the sky down. It didn't come horizontally like, across the plane. Yeah.
Yeah, like lighthouse wood when it spins.
The other one that we're just going to touch on here, I'd like to do a full episode on this though as well, is a little more credible, in my opinion, and it actually has to do with a place called Porton Down, which is a top secret chemical research site in Britain. Right after the event, and this site was like chemical weapons. They, at least one person died there wrongfully, due to experimentation with chemical weapons. Another group, I think it was three different, human experiments, servicemen were unknowingly dosed with LSD back in the 50s.
All right.
A lot There's of a LSD.
Okay.
Like a scary amount of LSD. And so they also, they filed a suit and won the suit. So, the other theory, because Porton Down, staff from Porton Down showed up, swept the forest shortly after this event, is that it was some sort of experiment in mass hallucination, in chemical warfare, mind control warfare through the use of chemicals.
And there's also belief that Porton Down also houses aliens as well.
Aliens. There was
It is essentially the British Area 51.
It is. We've got the British Roswell and the British Area 51.
They just keep copying us.
There was a crash, right? Gosh.
I don't blame him.
We are pretty great. There was a crash in 1974 in the Berwyn Mountains that was said to have yielded recoverable bodies, and Porton Down is where they were supposed to go. So that's the really the only other theory that to me holds a little bit of water. I mean, the sickness, like I said, for me, the biggest thing is the sickness. The disease could definitely be caused by chemical agents.
Absolutely.
But it's still, even then, we don't know much about mass hallucination. We do know that it doesn't really happen that often. In reality, I mean, you may get two people seeing something at the same time, but they're usually seeing different things.
Right, different stories.
But even the same. Yeah, even then, that's a little much for me. And I don't see why, because that's a British-owned operation, British-controlled operation. I don't see why they would think it was okay to come do that to
American, yeah.
Thank you very much. But yeah, without starting an international incident, really. So to me, again, doesn't hold too much water. But well,
so essentially, we've had this incident that occurred back in the 80s that has taken quite a different evolution over the past 35 years. So
changing, evolving, all the way up until last year.
We've spoken about quite a bit of it. So take what you can. Let it digest, boil down, read some more for yourself. I think it's definitely something interesting to look into.
We'll have all these links, yep, in the show notes.
That it boils down to. Mm-hmm. It's not just a UFO. It's possible time travel. It's a whole lot of other things happening at once.
It's not just an alien, yeah.
And so this is definitely an interesting story, and I thank Sam for bringing it up.
Yeah.
And bringing it to us today.
Well, cool. All right. Episode 2's on the books.
Good, yeah.
Cool.
Thanks for joining us
yes,
today.
Yes, thank you so much. Just a reminder really quick, if you like us, if you like this episode, feel free to go to the iTunes store, subscribe, like us, rate us. We're also on Stitcher. We're also on a lot of your third-party apps that pull from those databases. We are still and always will be looking for new stories and for feedback. So if you like this episode or hate it, let us know. We tried to go a bit more conversational with this one because that was the feedback that was given. If it was a bit too conversational, let us know. And please reach out to us at notalonepodcast@gmail.com with any of those stories, with any of those critiques or positive feedback. We like that too. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm trying to set up a Tumblr, but I don't know how. So we'll get to that later.
Slowly but surely.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much. What was that thing we said last time?
Oh, I think it was...
Remember, whether in the bright light of sunshine or the dark blanket of a moonless night, we are not alone.